Okay, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to talk today. And I'm going to try and focus things down. When I started working in Queensland Health almost 3 years ago now, I actually had a full head of hair. Our chair referred to the fact that that David and I must be spending a fair amount of time together, and in fact, if we spend any more time together than we are at present in darkened rooms, there'll be serious concerns about our sexual orientation. In thinking about what I might say yesterday about this, I decided to totally revamp what I was going to say. And what I want to just talk about, really, there's a whole range of things in the reform process that I could talk about today, and I sort of thought, well, what are the key ones that are here? So today I'm really only going to focus on what I think are some of the immediate issues, thinking about it from essentially a service delivery perspective as a state bureaucrat. So I'm going to talk about service demand and risk sharing, meeting that demand and the workforce supply, and some issues around responsibilities, roles and responsibilities. I'm not going to talk about some of the other important key issues in reform, about trying to do something about the demand flow and the role of prevention in that, about the serious dialogue that Australia has to have around rationalising public and private health sector interfaces. As these things become closer and closer together, we have some extremely odd arrangements between the two. So, for example, we have a situation at the moment where Commonwealth Government actually provides a higher level of subsidy for an elderly person to have a cataract operation in the private sector than they do in the public sector. Equally, we're in a situation where the public sector is increasingly drawing on the private sector to provide a range of services, and we need to have a debate and dialogue about that. The other, for me, intermediate to me, is things which have to occur within the next 5 years. Immediate are things that have to happen in the next 12 months. The issue of the individual electronic health record, which many of the things that people are looking for restructuring of governments to do could actually be achieved by simply getting in place a way that the different sectors could actually know what's actually happening with a patient. And the easiest way of achieving that would be through a national individual electronic health record, which would cost us about the equivalent of a major new teaching hospital, so about $1.5 to $2 billion. Let me just talk about the demand. We are facing an absolutely phenomenal growth in demand at the moment. You'll have seen in my key issues, I didn't put chronic disease up there as a key issue in and of itself. That's because chronic disease is our core business. It's what's driving everything we do at the moment. So long as we continue to talk about it as something outside of that system, we forget about the fact that we have to actually reorientate the whole system to deal with the issue of chronic disease. It is what our business is. So you can choose whatever type of service that a state government provides at the moment, ambulance services, emergency department, non-emergency patient transport, public admissions, day-only admissions, overnight admissions, whatever you like. They're going through the roof in terms of the growth that's occurring. If you look at our projections through to 2016, we're not talking about sort of, you know, way, way off in the future. This is not 2040, this is 2016. And we look at the demand over that period of time in both the public and in the private sector for overnight stays. You can see that what we're predicting in Queensland, and it won't be vastly different in other states, a major increase in demand for hospital beds. Another way of looking at that is to look at it by service-related groups. Service-related groups, just different types of care that you might provide. So, I can get this to point for me. No. It doesn't really matter. All this is saying is you can look at any groups, cardiology, endocrinology, respiratory medicines, orthopaedics, non-acute, subspecialty, they are all increasing. Some more than others, but they are all increasing over the period of time that we're talking about in terms of service. It is an important issue for us that when it comes down to providing those public health services, that what we have seen is a decrease in share of Commonwealth funding towards that. My colleagues and I in Queensland run something like an $8.5 billion health service at the moment. Across that period of time, just from 2006 going through, looking forward, if we base it on the current Commonwealth share, we will see a continuing decline in the Commonwealth share of the costs of public hospital systems. Oops. And while David has referred to the fact that there doesn't appear to be much shift overall in terms of this, in terms of the global amounts of money, the split between the Commonwealth and the states and other parties in terms of funding health, what that actually means in practical terms for us in Queensland is that if we don't get something like at least $500 million in growth in the Commonwealth share towards us, plus something around between the 8 and 10% indexation across that period of time, Commonwealth share will continue to fall. In fact, if we wanted to move back to the position that we were 10 years ago, which is closer to a 50% share of the cost of public hospital services, it's worth about $2 billion a year to us. That is a significant amount of service. Okay, that said, there are issues that are fundamental to us, and David touched on some of these, and thinking about where we might go. So, in particular, one of those is the issue of workforce supply. To meet that demand, and it is in part a reflection of the fact that there has been an underinvestment in health and in health infrastructure in Queensland for quite a substantial period of time, we're in a sort of catch-up phase. A catch-up phase which is trying to deal with that underinvestment, but also the growth in population and the ageing of the population that we're seeing in Queensland, in particular in terms of the growth and ageing across Australia. So at the moment we're building three new major tertiary hospitals. We're building two new provincial hospitals. There are five. There isn't actually a major hospital in Queensland which isn't having a major expansion. And I'm scared to open the papers because probably find that they've announced another hospital somewhere else that we're building today. What are some of the priority areas that we need to invest in relation to that? Well, subacute care is a very big area, so that's rehabilitation, geriatric care, those sorts of things. We have a major shortage of intensive care beds. We have a shortage of renal, the growth in patients with end-stage renal disease, particularly anywhere where there's an Indigenous population, is a very major challenge for all the health system. And mental health is a growing problem in both the ambulatory and inpatient environment. To meet that demand, a whole range of things that we've been trying to do, things like these things are not unique. These things are being done all around Australia. Hospital in the home, hospital in the nursing home as a way of trying to deal with keeping people out of hospital when they don't actually need to be in acute hospital bed but need to be supported. Telephone triage lines, more ambulatory care settings like which we call health precincts in Queensland. Surgery Connect, which is a system for contracting elective surgery in the private sector for long wait patients. These are all things which we're trying to do with demand. But fundamentally, if we start to think about what our constraints are going to be, the issue is really around workforce. So, for example, here's some projection work that we've done again through to 2016, just looking at three elements of the clinical workforce, three absolutely critical elements: the doctors, the enrolled nurses, and the registered nurses. And this is all this table shows is a series of modelling scenarios that we've used. And then at the bottom there is the average of those different scenarios reflecting different types of growth, different types of models, etc. And that shows you what we project the deficits in Queensland, this is not Australia, the deficits in workforce will be in 2016. So we're projecting that we will need, despite the major investment that we've just made in increasing medical student numbers in Australia, we're projecting that we'll have a deficit of about 547 doctors in 2016. Look to the other side of that table, the shortage we're looking at for nursing, more than 4,000 nurses we predict to be short, despite the fact of the growth that we are currently been in relation to that. There are some special elements of that we need to take into account. This is the number of special purpose registrants in Queensland from 1995 through to 2005, and it's continued to grow. So this is the number of essentially international medical graduates coming into Australia during that period of time. this is one of the things that really blew me away when I went into Queensland Health and actually got hold of some of this data and started to look at it. We have multiple regional hospitals where 50% of the doctors in those hospitals are international medical graduates providing those services. Now, there is nothing wrong with international medical graduates. This is not about saying, you know, these are bad doctors. This is not about the Patels of the world. This is about saying, one, this is the level of importation that we are requiring from elsewhere to support our system. And two, when you have a hospital where 50% of the people have never actually trained in the Australian system, you have to ask issues about the safety and function of that hospital. It has a whole range of other flow-on effects. It has flow-on effects to the training issues of training Australian graduates. It has flow-on effects to the willingness of Australian specialists to work in those hospitals because they don't have a trust or they don't have the same willingness to invest their time in the training of people in those sorts of environments. So it has a whole range of other effects other than the fact that we're plundering the world for health workforce. Yes, the Australian population is ageing, but if you want to look at a bit of it that's ageing, where the age impact is going to hit us very, very rapidly, then look at the medical work. Then look at the medical and nursing workforce. We might be saved a little bit by the current financial status, which will keep a number of these people working for longer. But when you look at something, for example, like our visiting medical officers, these are all specialist groups, and you look at their average age, we are going to be hit not in 10 years' time, but within the next 5 years' time by the retirement groups in this area. So, yes, I welcome this major growth in medical graduates, the major increase in this, but it doesn't solve our problem. Having 500 plus more medical graduates in Queensland doesn't actually help us very much, because for those people to actually become useful doctors, we actually have to train them, and we need a significant number of them, about half, to go into general practice and have training in general practice, and we need about the other half to be able to go into some sort of specialty training. So we've done the first bit of this work. We've got the increase in the medical graduate numbers. We've got an increase in nursing numbers. We now got the second part, which we have to work together on, which is training these people into differentiated doctors to support what we do. Of course, there's a lot of other things that we can do. We're very interested in the issue of pushing the scope of practice of clinicians so that they can work outside their traditional boundaries. The issue of fatigue among work staff, clinical staff, is a major issue, which is going to cripple us. So we've got the increasing number of women in the workforce. The willingness of doctors and nursing staff to work the sort of hours that we traditionally asked of them, and their concerns around fatigue in terms of patient safety. Again, the functional workforce as opposed to the absolute numbers of people in the workforce is quite different. And those OECD numbers that David presented do not tell us about the functional capacity of the workforce. We're interested in new roles, and some of you may be aware that we're, along with South Australia, in the process of trialling physician assistants. We have just got agreement to trial allied health assistants. We've got some interesting models around developing rural generalist medical practitioners. We are, in conjunction with the Commonwealth, leading the way with developing medical specialty training in the private sector, with some almost 60 positions now training across the public and private sector in Queensland. We've got some interesting approaches to recruitment, which I won't talk about here, trying to take into account the fact that we don't actually want to plunder the world for our workforce. Then how do we actually have an ethical approach to recruitment? The last issue I want to touch on is the issue of roles and responsibilities. And I mean the roles and responsibilities of different level of governments that I'm talking about here. Now, I'm perfectly happy for the Prime Minister to run a plebiscite to take over health. It's of no consequence to me, because I think it'll make absolutely no difference to health service delivery in Australia. The issues that we need to sort out are issues which go beyond that. It might make some for some efficiencies in government. I'm yet to be convinced that that is the case. For me, the key issue really is that we have to sort out between different levels of government what their roles and responsibilities are. And to me, that's what the reform agenda that we need and we can do in the immediate sense is about. We have a process at the moment which is trying to drive that. We have a somewhat complex process that David and I have to try and balance between. There are three processes at a national level happening: the National Health and Hospitals Reform Commission, the Council of Australian Governments Health and Ageing Work Group, and the Heads of Treasury directed reforms. The Heads of Treasury's reforms are about whole of government approaches to funding between states, between the Commonwealth and the state, which is pushing the idea that we will have a smaller number of special purpose payments between the states, between the Commonwealth and the states, with a relatively small number of performance indicators linked around that. On the other hand, we're trying to balance the Council of Australian Government's directions, which around greater accountability, a desire which, from a Commonwealth perspective, frequently is tied to a direct link between the amount of money that they give you and what they want to do. It's actually not something that is stupid in any way. It's a pretty obvious thing that you might want to try and do if you're buying something, but it does complicate issues and particularly presents this internal conflict for us in trying to work out the next healthcare agreement. And then on top of that, somewhere along the track, we're going to have to deal with the Reform Commission. Queensland Government has given a view. We actually asked them, as bureaucrats, asked them to say, OK, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to give this over to the Commonwealth? What do you actually want to do? And we presented with them a series of options, and that options were then formed a submission to the National Health and Hospitals Reform Commission in terms of what they wanted to do. So they've actually said, yeah, no, we actually want to stay in the health business, which surprised me a bit, particularly as our former Premier had said he was quite happy to have it taken over by the Commonwealth. I'm wondering whether my new Premier is sometimes saying that as well, at least when she gets up in the morning. But the view that they've expressed is that the Commonwealth should take responsibility for primary care, that they should take overall responsibility for policy and funding of that. It does not mean that the states are not a deliverer of those services. It just means that one level of government has to take responsibility for the whole of that sector and decide what it's going to do and how it's going to put its money into it. We have a strong view that around chronic disease prevention and management, that issue has to be addressed in the primary care area, and that there are major issues of MBS reform. Part of the reason why we believe the Commonwealth needs to take that responsibility for the primary care. We would like to see some rationalisation, again, this public-private interface between what actually happens in the public sector and the private sector around access to specialist care. You know, we already have billing public sector clinics, we need some rationalisation in that area. We want to see the sharing of that risk between the states and Commonwealth more fairly balanced. We think the Commonwealth should take responsibility for all of aged care. Again, we're quite happy to be a provider in that space, but somebody needs to take responsibility for that. And that, from our perspective, also means that for the 400 or so beds a day which are occupied in Queensland by acute beds, which are occupied by long-stay patients, that there would be some compensation when those people can't find to the states for when those people can't be placed. We're suggesting that the states are probably better placed when you're trying to integrate delivery of different components of the system, such as in Indigenous health, mental health and public health. The Queensland Government has sort of chosen five areas that it believes that it needs to address and set some very challenging targets for us around expanding health services to meet the needs of that growing population, stemming the devastating tide of preventable disease, which is really the chronic disease challenge, the issues around getting a healthy start and the fact that our birth rate has grown quite substantially and is placing a number of pressures on us for a range of reasons. The issue of improving mental health and mental health care, it is one of the indicators in Australia which is actually going a bit backwards. An important issue for both government and for me, which is reducing the gap for rural communities and for all Indigenous Australians, is a key area. So, what does Queensland want from the reform process? We want a fair share, which means an increase in Commonwealth share of the cost of public hospital services. But equally importantly, it's about the indexation component, that is, that the indexation, the growth in that funding, is realistic in terms of the growth in demand and costs. We need to jointly look at this issue of workforce and workforce capacity, and I use capacity in the broader sense of the word, not just about numbers, but about what and how that workforce is used. And an absolute priority is getting some clearer roles and responsibilities so somebody has a clear accountability for each component of the health system. Thank you very much.